Good morning. Welcome to our second We've Been Everywhere of the calendar year. Usually I get up here and I introduce someone that everybody already knows very, very well, but today I am introducing Taryn Rice, who is one of our newer employees, although she's been around in previous capacities. Taryn began her library career as a student worker in the manuscripts department from 2006 to 2009, and while she was in there, she received her BA and her MA from Western. In May 2012, however, she began her current position in the Kentucky Library as a manuscripts technician. She also teaches history and English at Owensboro Community Technical College, which makes her far more industrious than me. In the summer of 2008, she spent a semester abroad in England studying British literature and went to several of the historical palaces that she's going to tell us about today. So if you would, welcome, please, Taryn Rice.
Thank you, Ken, and thank you all for coming out to hear me today. As Ken said, I do teach history for Owensboro Community and Technical College. My master's was in pre-modern Europe, so all these palaces go right along with everything that I have studied the past 7 years. I really just wanted to take you guys through how I saw the palaces, kind of the history, because there's so much information. We're really just going to focus on the Tower of London and then Hampton Court today. So I'm going to start by giving us a history of the Tower of London. Okay, so many of us are familiar with the Tower of London as kind of a prison, a fortress. It was also a palace previously to being a prison. They never intended it to be the primary residence for the royal family. And it actually had its beginnings with William the Conqueror. So it's been standing in some sense since about 1066 or so. What William did is he began construction on the White Tower, which was one of the most imposing medieval castles of the time once they completed it. This is about 1070s as he's doing that. So what he did was he created the White Tower, he created ditches around it, which we would call moats today. Just a few years later, they held their first prisoner in the Tower of London, for which it would be known for mostly. Went on to become kind of a zoo, a menagerie. King John I was the first to do that. He brought several exotic animals, lions, tigers, things like that, to the tower. By the mid-13th century, we have King Henry III. He was a child, so his regents actually began renovating the tower. They added several towers. Now, at its first construction, there was the White Tower and then just a few others. So several others were added throughout the years. So it became kind of a fortress, especially when the barons overthrew the monarchy. They came here to seek refuge at that point. During the reign of Edward I, he spent more than £21,000 and kind of creating the basic outline of it today. It's a castle built in concentric circles, so it kind of wraps around itself, again, strengthening the fortress aspect of the tower. It becomes a place to have tournaments, to have victory celebrations, and of course a place of execution and torture. And some of the most famous prisoners, we'll get to all of them, but I know most people think of the two little princes that were imprisoned there and what we assume to be murdered by their uncle. It was also a place for religious and political prisoners, some of which who were just held during the reigns of Henry VIII, Mary I, the kind of the Tudor monarchs. During the English Civil War, it was held by parliamentarians and not by the monarchy for a time, and they actually got rid of the crown jewels, which was a huge loss in this time. After this, about 1600s, it became a munition storage. So the family was not living here quite as much. They began maintaining the moat and then kind of built up the existing fortifications by the 18th century. By Victoria's reign, it had kind of become a tourist attraction. And the last state prisoners that were held in the tower actually passed World War II. So I think it was a man that was working for Hitler was the final prisoner. Some of these just pictures that I took, this is on the outside of the tower looking in. And this was a really cool shot because I wasn't inside the Tower of London yet, but it framed it nicely with the Tower of London, the Tower Bridge right behind it. Okay, also from here you can see the different styles, which I'll talk about the individual towers as we go on. Kind of a more Norman style right there in the middle. All right, the first one we'll talk about is the Byward Tower. It's very small, but it says 1280, and that's about when it was constructed. What they wanted to do, this is 1280, so it's about 200 years into the tower's original time that it was built. So what they did was they created a new entrance here with a drawbridge, and it doesn't exist like that today, but they worked on it for several years, and it is in Norman style, excuse me, with the windows and then the bricks. Okay, one of the other towers was the Bell Tower, completed about 1190. This came about mostly through Richard the Lionheart. Again, this is more of a Norman style, even though we're past Norman monarchs with Richard. What they were seeking to do was to expand the castle area, and again, through the medieval period from about from when it was constructed in William's reign all the way up through maybe 13, 1400s, they're trying to just strengthen it and make it a larger area. It's actually the second oldest building standing here at the Tower of London. And there were a few pretty famous people imprisoned in this particular tower. Thomas More, imprisoned here. And then Elizabeth I, who would go on to be Queen of England. And she was imprisoned by her own sister because they thought she was trying to take over. And again, religious issues there. Elizabeth was a Protestant, her sister was a Catholic. So many of the prisoners, and Thomas More is one of these, many of them were there because of religious differences. Okay, right here we have the Traitor's Gate, which is pretty similar. They haven't had to do too much restoration to it. Prisoners that were brought to the Tower of London were brought by the river, and of course not through the land. So they'd be brought on a barge along the Thames, and they would go under London Bridge, which is also where they would see the heads of the people that had just been beheaded. So it was kind of a fear factor thing, getting them afraid, getting them worried about what lies in store for them. There's rumors that Elizabeth I sat on the steps just through this gate and then refused to go any further, again, saying that she was innocent and that there was nothing that they could convict her of. So all the traitors you can think of, all religious prisoners, political traitors, they were all brought through this same entrance. Okay, now this is one that it's pretty popular for its name anyway. It's called the Bloody Tower. It didn't always have this name, but as you can imagine, there's issues of murder. It's mainly why we have it. They decided to name it that. Okay, it was originally called the Garden Tower, which is a nice name. You associate that with trees, with landscaping, maybe because of its view. However, it became known as the Bloody Tower after the supposed murder of the two princes, which I'll talk about. So it was built in the 1220s, also to control the river entrance, similar to the Byward Tower. It was rebuilt by Edward III, and then I have a few of its famous prisoners as well. We have Sir Walter Raleigh. He was imprisoned for 13 years. We have two archbishops of Canterbury imprisoned here, and then the two princes, little Edward and Richard. And this is kind of a mystery throughout history that no one's completely sure of, but time has shown that more than likely it was a murder committed by their uncle, Richard III. He was the Duke of Gloucester, and these two princes were standing in the way of him ruling, and he wanted the throne. There were skeletons found at a later date, and I think it's about 100 years after the princes disappeared, they figured it out, and then they renamed the tower because of that. All right, I have a few pictures of the exhibits that I saw. They had quite a bit on Sir Walter Raleigh since he's so notable. He's one of the most famous prisoners. Actually, he didn't live the life of a real prisoner, you know, bread and water, chains and all of that. They made it a comfortable place for him. So this is very much opposite of what we would think of going to the tower to be punished, to be imprisoned. So it was adapted as a comfortable residence for Raleigh, and his wife and children actually stayed with him while he was imprisoned. I have a picture here. This is a picture of his desk. You can see he could write. He has candles. It's well lit. There's a picture of him there above the desk. So not all of the people that came here as prisoners were, in fact, suffering. There's an area up at the top of the tower where he's reported to have walked, kind of paced. He wasn't allowed to get out, but he could stay within this tower. He could look out on the city of London. And this was his view. Of course, it would be different. The bridge still would have been there on the left. Other more modern buildings wouldn't, of course, been there. But this is where his ghost is reported to haunt, right here along Raleigh's Walk. And these were the stairs that I took to get up to that point. So it gives you an idea of kind of the very typical style, the spiral staircases. Again, very, very, look at the degree there, so it's very difficult to walk up those. Next, we'll look at the Wakefield Tower. And this one was built, again, right around the same time, 1238, around the time of Henry III, in another Norman style. What's important about this one is that it was actually the scene of Anne Boleyn's trial. And also imprisoned Yorkists and the Lancastrian conflict with the War of the Roses. the end of the War of the Roses, then comes Henry Tudor, who brings in the Tudor dynasty. But before that, we had Henry VI, and he was of the Lancastrian line, because there were two houses of England that were fighting over supremacy. So Henry is murdered here in this tower. This is a view within the tower. I was standing near the White Tower, which we'll see a better picture of, but it's here on this right side. And there's kind of a more modern area there. All the other towers are kind of behind me. I don't know if I have a good picture from that. Okay. We've talked already a little bit about the White Tower. This was built originally by William the Conqueror, and it was called the most complete medieval palace in Europe at the time. It was seen originally as a fortress, oldest building at the tower. It would later become a military storehouse, and now if you go in there, that's where you can view the crown jewels. You're kept on a moving sidewalk. You can't linger very long if you're looking at the crown jewels. And also, I think they have the, I think it's an exhibit on weaponry and armor, too. Okay, there's a picture of me right outside the White Tower. And the great thing about this is the structure of it and the design, kind of the arched windows there, very, very true to the original style. All right, now we'll move on to Tower Green, which is not so much a tower, but just an area within the Tower of London. Okay, and this green area is what they refer to when they say Tower Green. And supposedly, this is the area where they took Guy Fawkes when they questioned him about gunpowder plots. So this is a newer area. You can see the design there. It's different from kind of the medieval castle. Okay, these, I just had some pictures here, which we can't look at too closely, but basically, the Tower Green, it would have been used as kind of a place for entertainment before beheadings, which is what it's become known for now. So executions is another exhibit there, and we can see kind of this small picture here that shows the beheading of Anne Boleyn. And that's actually not totally accurate. She's one of the only prisoners to be beheaded by a sword and not an axe. So they show the axe right there, but she had an exception for some reason. Right. So the executions at Tower Green, right here. This was reserved for kind of a private execution. As you can tell, she was a queen. So it was private. They didn't want the general public coming in and ruining that moment. So they did give these political prisoners some dignity in their death. That small inset picture right there is Catherine Howard, and that was the other wife that supposedly cheated on Henry VIII. She was beheaded for that, just like Anne Boleyn was. Also during this period, we had Lady Jane Grey, who ruled for 6 days. That's before they were kind of a political coup. They had Tudors that could reign, and she descended from the Tudors, but they put her on the throne kind of as a puppet, and then they killed her a few days later. So mostly it's the Tudors that were in here that were doing all the beheadings. And here's a close-up. Okay, so the caption reads, Anne Boleyn on the scaffold, 19th of May, 1536. Okay, yeah, and it notes here, that's a more contemporary picture, and she was actually, you know, hacked with the sword and not the axe. This is kind of a neat little monument that they made when they tore down the scaffolds and they redid the tower, which would be about, I think, Victoria's reign. They fixed everything up to where visitors could come, and this is much more recent. But they put this pillow here to commemorate where the scaffold was, where they actually did all these beheadings. Okay, and we listed all these again. Jane Boleyn, sister of Anne Boleyn, also was beheaded here. Okay, and I have this quote here that they put. It's at the place there, and I thought that I would put it on here too. It's a weird feeling to stand right there and to know how much had happened and how many people had died. So I'll read it for us. Gentle visitor, pause a while. Where you stand, death cut away the light of many days. Here, jeweled names were broken from the vivid thread of life. May they rest in peace while we walk the generations around their strife and courage under these restless skies. Okay, it's kind of blurry, but this is the next tower, the Beauchamp Tower, again built in the 13th century. This was one of my favorites to look at, and this is the best picture I have of it, but there are different windows here. You can see kind of the Gothic style, and then there's smaller styles too. So that reflects how it was changed over the time when it was originally constructed, and then they decided to add more to fit in with the current style. This is also the tower that they let you see the most of, so I do have several pictures on the inside of this one. The walls on the inside of this are covered in graffiti from prisoners. You know, they would etch their name or etch a verse or initials inside here with some kind of sharp instrument. They didn't intend for that to be a place for prisoners. It would have been a defensive wall at first, surrounding the White Tower. Okay, and there's a few of the famous prisoners. We have Philip Howard, Lord Cobham, and the Dudley family, who were involved in the conspiracy to put Lady Jane Grey on the throne. Robert Dudley was particularly known for being a childhood friend of Elizabeth I, and he was imprisoned here. This is the crest of the Dudley family, and we're told that it was carved by John Dudley, who was the father, while he was imprisoned in this tower. Actually, the entire Dudley family, except for Robert, were all beheaded for treason. Here we can see he spent a lot of time on it, and I'm sure he was there for a while, so that had to do with it too. We can kind of make out the letters, and again, the style would have been different. That would have been their U that we would say today. So you can see the D-U-D-L-E right there for the family name. Okay, and then another one was carved supposedly by Robert Dudley. So we have R right here, should Robert, and then the D for the Dudley. Okay, we had to kind of line up to look at each of them, and they had numbers that would correspond with initials and all of that, but this is how it looks. So you can see the renovated tower here, but these are real pieces that remained, and those are the ones, of course, that I just showed you pictures of. So it gives you an idea of how much of it was really authentic and how much they kept. Okay, there's another one. This one was probably the most prominent. Thomas Rooper, I don't really know who he is, but he did a really good job in carving his name out at 1570. So this is, again, during the Tudor period. Most of these were done during the 16th century. Okay, another little story that's kind of fun about the Tower of London. There's kind of a superstitious myth about ravens there. And this is where most of them typically live. You can see them kind of on the green area here. This is in between some collapsed towers, and the White Tower is on the other side of it here. But if the ravens were ever to leave the Tower of London, then the monarchy would be destined to fail. So that's just kind of a little myth they talk about. And I took a picture, a close-up of a raven there, just because many people talked about it kind of funny way. So that concludes the Tower of London there. I spent a lot of time in London, and then I made a special trip to go just outside of London to Hampton Court, because the Tudors are my specialty. That's what I love talking about and studying. So here we go. We'll start with Hampton Court. Let me give you a little bit of a history here. Hampton Court's not nearly as old as the Tower of London. It was constructed in the 13th century, and they started it as a royal guest house, kind of the grounds. And then it eventually became Thomas Wolsey's own residence. So in the early 16th century, Thomas Wolsey builds it. He has a grand apartment for himself. He builds apartments for the king and the queen as well. And at that time, it's Henry VIII and his first wife, Catherine. So he expands it. He builds private chambers. There are tennis courts. There's a bowling alley. There's lakes. They would hunt here. And again, this is removed from London, so the tower had a totally different purpose. Hampton Court is more of a place to relax. This is for the royal family's private use. Okay, so by the time it's complete, maybe mid-1520s or so, they start bringing guests here from Europe. This is a common place to entertain visitors. You know, if they were trying to marry off someone in the royal family, they would have them meet here and kind of, you know, show them around. They would even sign treaties here, just in a nice setting, basically. Okay, by 1528, Henry took over control of the palace himself. This facade, anyway, is the original Tudor design. It later would go on to be changed by William and Mary, and we'll see some of that. But Hampton Court is mixed with kind of a Tudor, and then with more of a Georgian style later on. A visiting duke from Germany said that Hampton Court was the most splendid and most magnificent royal edifice to be found in England, or for that matter, in other countries. It did serve as a prison for a brief time. They held Charles I here again during the English Civil War before they beheaded him. Parliamentary troops seized this palace too, like they took control of the tower as well. And one of the sad things about it is they stripped it of all the frivolities, so it kind of lost a few things there. But when it came to be rebuilt, that was done by William and Mary, like I mentioned, and their architect was Sir Christopher Wren. So he rebuilds the King and Queen's quarters, he transforms the facades and replaces the towers with more of a Baroque style. They didn't use it very much. Mary actually died, and William spent so much time and so much money into making it beautiful that he really didn't even spend enough time here either. So that's the late 17th century. By 1737, it's no longer used by the royal family. Once Victoria comes around, she opens this. She says she wants everyone to be able to walk through the palace instead of just those of the upper class. So this is opened as a museum, as a historic royal palace, about that time, mid-19th century. And these are some of the views of it. It's really not too far from London, but enough out of the way that you still kind of get a peaceful countryside feel. Okay, this is coming through the gates. And then again, that Tudor facade. And the chimneys are one of the most remarkable things about Hampton Court. They were clustered in groups. As you can see, most of them are all together. They were designed in kind of a twisting, spiraling period. And what that would do is that would help the hot air move up and out quicker. And then the chimneys would cool down better than just kind of a regular square chimney. The ceilings here are pretty elaborate. Most of them, and this I think is an exception, I think this may have been Queen Anne Boleyn's symbol, but many times they would inscribe the initials of the monarchs, and we'll see some of those later on. Okay, here we are on the inside, so we saw the front, and now we're seeing the back side of it. And this one was kind of redone by George II, and if you can see right here, we'll get a close-up of it. But this is a G and an R to stand for George Regis, George the King. And this has more classical style with it. And there's the close-up of it. And it even has the little 2 in the top right corner to show that he's George II. All right. Now, unfortunately, at Hampton Court, they don't let you take a lot of pictures. So I did what I could based on what they did let me see and then what the exhibits showed. So here we have Clock Court. And this is also Anne Boleyn's gate. So this entryway is named for Anne Boleyn. So it was built about 1540. And the clock is an astronomical clock that still works today. It shows the time of day, phases of the moon, the month, and then even the high water at London Bridge. Called Anne Boleyn's gate because her apartments, you see where these windows are right here. They were building her apartments, these grand, lavish apartments, but they were still working on them when they killed her. So that kind of shows the quickness that Henry tired of his wives. So they planned lots of things, and there are elements still of Anne that are left at Hampton Court. Okay, and here's a close-up of it if you want to look at the clock. It's beautiful. You see the gold design. It has the letters of the different astrological signs, too. Okay, here's the royal arms of the Tudors. This is what Henry put on. He used this to cover up Wolsey's because he bought this. He got this from Wolsey, so he wanted to make his own. So he put his own stamp on this. Okay, this was one of my favorite rooms. I did have to get this picture offline because they don't let you take pictures of it. This is the Great Hall. It was built in 1530s, and the tapestries along the walls, which we can't see, they tell the story of Abraham from the Old Testament. The roof is a hammer beam roof. You can see kind of how it comes down from there and the style of the woodwork at the top. And it was a theater. It was a dining room. This was for Henry and his close companions, really. And there are badges within this room that have Henry and Anne's initials entwined. I think I must have it later on. This one, again, I don't have a great picture of it, but this was called the Great Watching Chamber. And this is adjoining to the Great Hall. So this is where the yeoman guards watched and guarded the rooms for the king. So this is just kind of a security area. And then this would lead directly to the private apartments. So just kind of a go-between area. And the ceiling, it's gold-leafed, and it really is 3D. It's not just painted on there. It has the gold edging on there. And some pieces of the ceiling are original. Okay, and then this was just kind of for fun. With British palaces, there's always ghosts. We talked about Jane Seymour. She was the wife that did not get killed. She died after giving birth to his only son, Prince Edward. Okay, so she's the main one. Lady in Grey is what she's called. Her ghost is really there. Again, it's kind of hard to see that picture, but if you look at it, this is H and A, and so the intertwined initials of Henry and Anne Boleyn. And those are within the Great Hall, so I couldn't get a picture of it. Okay, this is the newer section of Hampton Court. Kind of what I mentioned earlier. Henry did the initial design. He did the Tudor kind of style at first, and then William and Mary came along and then changed it. This was kind of more of a Baroque style. See, it's a little bit more, everything's symmetrical. One of the main things about it is it has repetitive rhythm, so everything kind of corresponds.
and all the archways, all the windows.
Okay, and this is out the back side, kind of a fountain court of the newer part of Hampton Court.
And it has, I just took a picture of this because it has William and Mary
engraved there. So they very much put their stamp on everything, and their entwined initials are up here too, W and M. Okay, so here's another one, William Regis, and to show that he was king. The last part that I have here is just a little bit about the Tudor gardens. The gardens weren't as important during the period where William and Mary were reigning, but I mentioned that the grounds were used for hunting. They were also used for beautifying the area. So let me just show you a few of those pictures. But here is a neat picture of the Baroque, the Georgian style, and then in the background we have all the chimneys and a Tudor style. So they are kind of at odds, but it's just neat to see just the development of those two buildings. All right, so here's a picture of me with the fountain in the background, and I'm in the gardens. Again, this is the backside of the newer Baroque area. And I think that... So as I left the palace, let me go back real quick. Okay, so I started up here where these, and then I went down the little walkway there to get to this fountain. And here's one side of it. Okay, so you see different styles, different sizes even of the shrubbery and the flowers, and then there's marble figures in kind of in the courtyard area. Off to the side here, there was a sunken garden, which really just means that it's dropped down. Again, the hedges are carefully clipped, and you see more figurines there. And then behind it, this is a later period, but it's the banqueting house, which was used by other monarchs when they didn't want to use Hampton Court any longer. All right, and I think that's all that I have. You guys have any questions for me?
None of the monarchs are buried on any of these royal...
Not that I know of, no. Most of them are at Westminster.
What other buildings did Christopher Wren design?
I don't know. I'm not sure about him. What other buildings did Christopher Wren design?
He did St. Paul's.
That's right. Okay, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's put his mark.
The churches in downtown London, the old ones.
Yeah.
In the 1600s.
You hear the talk of towers, of course, and before you go there, I guess, you have this kind of a vision of these tall buildings, but they're right. Not that tall, are they?
No, they're not. They're not. The Tower of London, people think that's one tower, but it's many buildings, it's many castles kind of put all together. Yeah, it's funny. People do think of it like that.
Uh-huh. The ravens that you saw, were they fairly large compared to, like, say, a crow?
They were bigger. Yeah, they're bigger than birds that you'd see here, I think. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, they weren't monstrous or anything, but they were larger than, like, a small crow. Mm-hmm.
Which kind of architecture did you prefer the most?
I preferred Tudor. That may show in my presentation that I love all things Tudor, so that's what I like to talk about most.
Well, you mentioned the restriction on photographs, even in these ancient buildings. Mm-hmm. Is there a reason for that?
Well, it was sort of inconsistent because the Tower of London, you see most of that, got many pictures from there. But in Hampton Court, it's more privately owned. They don't have as many tours there. And they actually rent out parts of Hampton Court. I'm not entirely sure. I figured, as long as I don't use a flash, it's fine. But I'm not sure because the flash is what damages. But I don't know.
I think it's because they like to sell their books. And the books have all of them.
That's a good point, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I was told when I was in some of the castles, this is private property. This is the property mm-hmm. of the queen. And yeah. She doesn't want her stuff just everywhere.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. What's a good time if you're traveling to these places? What's the best time to see these kind of sites?
I went in the summer, which... Of course, the gardens are in bloom. It's beautiful. It's also very crowded because most people have the same idea. They want to come during the summer when they have a vacation. So, and I think that is probably the busiest time. But I would say maybe spring or even fall. It would be just as beautiful, but you wouldn't have to deal with as many other tourists. So.
Do you buy a pass of admission to all these books at once, each one separately priced, or how does that work?
You can. You can buy... There's several historic royal palaces. In addition to the Tower and Hampton Court, there's Kensington and then Kew Palace. And so you could buy all of them together, and it's cheaper. But you have to go to all of them within a certain amount of time. So I just did these two individually. Any other questions, comments? All right. Thank you all so much. It's been a pleasure.